What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Brandon Thurston from Wrestlenomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings. Downward spiral. Buy rates plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
We are live. It is John Pollock and Brandon Thurston, who is joining us from the Super Bowl contending home of the Buffalo Bills, who have made it one step closer. I'm sure that Bills Nation is in full effect, victorious over the Pittsburgh Steelers, a rare Monday late afternoon game that you were privy to.
Yes. And now it is official. Taylor Swift will be coming to Buffalo, New York. She has avoided it this long. It's not held a concert here in this, I would say city, but let's be honest. It's going to be in Orchard Park, which is a southern suburb of Buffalo. But a very Buffalo time is still underway. As you know, the game was postponed, but even worse weather, I would say, is hitting now, at least where I am.
Wow. So Taylor Swift has never done a show in Buffalo. Is there, I don't want to like pat ourselves on the back that I think we're getting six Taylor Swift shows here in Toronto later this year, but a very hot ticket in town, I understand.
Yes. Well, Buffalo is a city very much in decline. And Toronto still has lots of people in the area. So I think that's why you're getting it.
Well, hey, we're not going to win the Super Bowl this year. I can predict that. Are you on the bandwagon? Is this the time where you start to think, man, what if? Could the Bills do it?
Yeah, there was definitely a time where the offense was falling apart, and they fired their offensive coordinator, the guy who was slamming the binders and whatnot. And it feels like they're on a good roll, right? And we're seeing the Philadelphia Eagles self-destruct. It's time for Patrick Mahomes to come to Buffalo and whine and cry on the sideline throughout the game on Sunday or whatever day it's taking place on. And we'll see just how sad Taylor Swift is when the Buffalo Bills defeat the Kansas City Chiefs.
Man, Brandon is not screwing around here. Yes, we've got, it's a Sunday night game. Bills and Sunday Chiefs,
night. Okay,
6:30 Eastern this coming Sunday. I'm all in for the Bills. That's my team. I'm picking them officially.
Yeah, and I've seen some of our colleagues be kind of negative towards the Bills lately, and I won't name any names, certain Kansas City Bengals fans out there, I think, and that's not allowed on my timeline. I just want to say that.
Well, that's what the block button is for, I guess, when there's a slander against your home team. Well, there you have it. I'm sure the NFL will come up a little later on. We're going to be joined by Josh Nason, a returning guest from the Wrestling Observer website. So we will be going over a bunch of items with Josh. Always great to pick his brain. And I think we'll probably continue some of our ESPN discourse because, man, as soon as we we kind of put down the gauntlet and dissected the Pat McAfee situation, the drama at ESPN. Boom. Our show drops. And then Stephen A is thinking, you know what?
Yes.
Pat McAfee is getting just a few too many headlines here. What can I do? What is a several year old grudge that I could dig up and really bury somebody? And thus the Jason Whitlock promo came out later that night.
Stephen A thought, well, hey, if Pat McAfee's got a ticket to say what he wants, I sure do then too. So he dropped a pretty amazing promo. I've only listened to it with somebody inserted like a rap beat in the background.
Yeah, they put ether behind it, which was great. I mean, it was made for memes. The funny part is I watched it where it was like a 3-minute chunk. And I thought this was like the extent of it. I didn't realize this was like a 45-minute takedown of Jason Whitlock. I have not gotten through the entire thing, but that 3 minutes, I mean, it is, the man is gifted with his vocabulary and when it comes to just the emphasis on certain words. I mean, it was quite the takedown, and there was no way I was going to listen to Jason Whitlock's rebuttal, but entertaining nonetheless.
I used to remember people used to say wrestlers should really be studying the promos that are being cut right now at UFC. You've just come from a UFC media event. People need to study that Stephen A. Smith promo, and I think there are a lot of things that could be taken from it and could be put into a pro wrestling promo, which basically that was a pro wrestling promo.
You could go a lot worse than your inspiration as a promo being Stephen A. Smith, but maybe we'll chat a bit about that with Josh. Where I wanted to start things are a topic that has come up multiple times over the past year, and that is this upcoming Netflix documentary series on the one and only Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Now, Brandon, have you been interviewed for this Netflix project?
I have not been interviewed.
Okay, neither have I. Okay. Our emails must have gotten lost by Bill Simmons. But
it's probably in the spam folder.
One person who has been interviewed is Dave Meltzer. He said, in fact, multiple interviews he has done with them, with his most recent sit down coming this past Sunday, and indicating that the release date, it's going to be sooner than people think. And this series, this was announced well before the whole scandal hit with Vince McMahon. There were questions of whether this series was actually going to see its completion. It will be. It's supposed to be a multi-episode series on Vince McMahon. And I mean, really the only insight we have into it, other than the fact that Bill Simmons is one of the executive producers, WWE is, I'm sure, providing everything in terms of being partners with this agreement. But Meltzer also stating that he has been asked every conceivable topic when it comes to Vince McMahon. So what will make it into the final set of episodes remains to be determined, but this is probably going to be one of the most focused upon pro wrestling related series that we have seen, given the subject matter and especially with the allegations so fresh over these last 18 months.
Will this be an honest look, whatever we would consider an honest look into the life and career of Vince McMahon, or will this be, which will it be nearer to, or will it be nearer to a celebration of, wow, what a great businessman. You have to respect Vince.
I think that's the question, is this going to lean itself more towards a sort of journalistic piece, going to challenge the Vince McMahon story and address a lot of uncomfortable topics, or will this be something that more reflects a WWE DVD release that becomes more celebratory towards Vince McMahon and actually an act of PR in many ways in terms of rehabilitating the image of Vince McMahon at a time when it's certainly taken significant hits over this last 18-month period?
Yeah, if there's ever going to be a hagiography from people and talking heads that you're going to interview about a subject, it's Vince McMahon, I think, because he has so much. It's debatable whether how much power he has now, but he has had historically through the decades so much power. And I think there are so many people in the industry who would be natural interview subjects for a documentary like this who would be hesitant or have already, manufactured in themselves a reason to have kid gloves on when they talk about Vince, despite the fact that there are 7 known allegations of sexual misconduct against him. And I would say, if you somehow put that aside, I think that should be a major part of any documentary or any look at his career and life at this point, the news that broke 2 summers ago. But he also, over the last, 5 or 10 or arguably 20 years of his career as head of creative for WWE, he wore away the fan base. He wore away talent relationships to the extent that it created an opportunity for a competitor to exist. And now, you know, assuming they get a decent TV deal, permanently will exist.
Yes. And I think certainly you can look within sort of like there's so much to cover with a Vince McMahon that even if you get to certain topics, the depth that they are going to get into some of these subjects might be limited. And I think that you would expect, you know, some of the regular touchstones to get their ample time. Montreal, the Monday Night War, the creation of WrestleMania, all these things are going to have plenty of time dedicated to them. And when it comes to the allegations, I don't think you can do this without addressing it, but to what depth they go into, I wouldn't be going into it all that optimistic beyond, you know, and certainly you are not going to get anyone within kind of the pro wrestling side of things that have worked with Vince McMahon, past or present, that are going to say anything, I think, of consequence towards a Vince McMahon and his character.
Yeah, we don't know how many parts it'll be. I believe it was disclosed when this was announced. In fact, it was announced on a W earnings call a number of years ago now by Nick Khan. I think it's going to be a multi-part documentary. We don't know how many parts, obviously. It's a Bill Simmons piece, so you could see it going either way or somewhere in the middle.
Bill Simmons, he was not going to weigh in on the Stephen A. Smith or any of the controversies at ESPN recently.
He's had his own issues exiting ESPN, didn't he?
Actually, he took some shots at, like, indirect shots at Pat McAfee. Did you hear about this
on
his
show? No.
He started doing an impression of Pat McAfee and just kind of like tongue in cheek, like mocking his kind of style. And it was more interesting to see that, because I think people would look at Bill Simmons and Pat McAfee as kind of, certainly Bill Simmons is going to be most compared to a Pat McAfee in terms of someone that was an outspoken personality while in the ESPN ecosystem. And yeah, I don't know what their personal relationship is, but it was interesting to hear.
So he left ESPN in a sort of embattled way, didn't he? Bill Simmons did.
He had a lot of battles he fought at ESPN. He was critical of Roger Goodell at one point.
That's right.
That earned him a suspension, and a lot of people felt that he was, you know, somebody that was not afraid to kind of call things out in a public way with ESPN, and you know, had a big supporter in John Skipper, and you know, a guy that acquired a lot of power in ESPN and was one of the key people behind the 30 for 30 documentary series, and kind of created his own island at ESPN. And at a certain point, it's a fascinating culture at ESPN. And when you see all these stories come out, like, it really does have a Game of Thrones vibe to it without getting too dramatic.
That's why I heard about that, because New York Post, I believe Andrew Marchand, is reporting that there are advanced talks about the NFL buying a stake in ESPN. And before, I mean, obviously that hasn't happened yet, but before that even happened, ESPN and NFL are still TV partners. And, you know, I think Roger Goodell made a call to people at ESPN when Bill Simmons was being critical.
Yes. Can you imagine ESPN and the NFL having an ownership stake?
What is journalism?
It is a question as we move forward, and now league's getting a potential minority interest in a network. But I'm sure we will be discussing ESPN many weeks to come. But just kind of wrapping up things on the Vince McMahon documentary series. I mean, are there any? I guess, are there any topics that you feel might not be obvious ones that you do see being covered that maybe you, what is the extent that you would think that they would go to? Like, to me, the ultimate would have been like a Rita Chatterton, which I feel that is not a name that is going to come up in this, but could I be,
you don't think the name Rita Chatterton is going to be mentioned?
I would say no. I would say no.
It all depends on how many parts there are, right? How much length we've got to deal with here. I would be interested to hear about his childhood. I think Vince McMahon strikes me as somebody who's got some real issues that have, you know, been sprung on him from an early age. And I mean, just that Playboy magazine interview from all those years ago.
Oh yeah.
And all the details he sort of talked around there. If he's willing to expand on that, I think that would be interesting to learn about more about his relationship with his father, who you know, we understand he didn't really know until he was 12 years old.
Yeah. And with his stepfather, I mean, just had a horrific relationship with. I think that if you read the Ringmaster book, that to me was the most fascinating stuff, was digging into his childhood and sort of informing like the character that this individual would become. And the childhood part could be, I think, really enlightening to many people. That, I mean, I think anyone that follows Vince McMahon, that's an aspect of him that we know certain bits and pieces, but there's a fascinating story to be told there that I would hope they could go into, and they would have the resources to. The caveat here is that Vince McMahon, notoriously, he has a horrific memory. And I just don't know. And at the best of times, I think you're going to get Vince McMahon that, are you even going to get an honest Vince McMahon if he can have, you know, golden recall of all of these events? I think the idea of, to why whenever people would say, man, what a book it would be if Vince McMahon ever wrote a book. I'm like, really, would it be like, yes, there would be fascinating stuff in this. But in terms of just like a chronological and honest account of things, no, I don't think it would be all that great coming from Vince McMahon. I'm sure his right hand men over the years would probably have way more insight, and that would maybe be a little more honest than a Vince McMahon that's going to have that, I think, credibility issue to some.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a great biography probably to write when he's, you know, I don't know, maybe he's no longer with us and there's more people willing to talk and things like that. People who are close to him. Unfortunately, some people like Pat Patterson have already passed away. But yeah, I wonder how much of this documentary
the Kevin Dunn tell-all. Are we going to get that now?
There you go. Will Kevin Dunn do?
Kevin Dunn, the golden parachute story.
It all started with a car on fire and some videotapes in a trunk. That's got to be the opening, chapter one.
This should be a movie.
But I wonder how much of the very WWE version of history will make its way into this documentary. What are some of the tropes of the very WWE slanted version of history? The territories put themselves out of business, in his view. I mean, will we get stuff like that?
Will we get the term smoke-filled arenas in the
smoke-filled arenas? Really, really transformed it from being a regional territorial business to being the global phenomenon that we all know today.
Yeah, there's no one that I think was more aghast at it. It was when Paul Levesque adopted the smoke-filled arenas line than Montreal historian Pat LaPrade, who, I mean, like, here is a guy that has done like some of the heaviest research when it comes to like Montreal history and the attendance that they've drawn at like Jerry Park. And it was just fascinating that there was we now have another generation of WWE leaders now that can continue the smoke-filled arenas bit. But I am sure
Nick Khan has talked about being at shows where people were throwing batteries. This is the way it was before Vince.
Yeah. Nick Khan, I'm sure, will be, I think Nick Khan will be included in this documentary series.
Probably not much. I could see him definitely being involved. I don't know if he was an agent for Bill Simmons, but there seems to be some sort of relationship there that, yes, I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm pretty sure he represented him. They at least have they obviously have quite the rapport between the two of them. It'll be a fascinating series. It will be dissected every which way, and what is covered will be of interest. What is not covered will also be significant on top of it. But I do feel like this will have some appeal beyond just pro wrestling fans, that in terms of one central figure that is professional wrestling for many people on the outside, it is Vince McMahon. And having a platform like Netflix, I do feel like this will get a ton of attention. And I think WWE, it will also be interesting to see how significantly they promote this. I think they will, because I feel like it is safe to go back in the water when it comes to heavy promotion of Vince McMahon. And this will be the series that I do feel they will he will no longer be this like figure we don't speak of anymore. It'll be fine to like, here is the godfather of WWE, and present him in like sort of this emeritus role now in WWE. Like, here is the man that created this entire thing.
And promote this documentary on TV. I mean, like on Raw and SmackDown, they'll be talking about how
I think they will give this the full promotional push. I don't know how much media Vince does to promote this. I don't think he's doing an Undertaker media tour, but I could see maybe some select outlets for Vince to promote.
He would be welcome here for a talk.
Oh, he would be more than welcome to come on Pollock and Thurston. I would be more than happy to, as is Kevin Dunn, as is George Barrios, Michelle Wilson, all open doors here at Pollock and Thurston. So anyway, that is what's going on in the world of Netflix documentaries. Let's chat about a couple other topics before we bring Josh in here. Where do you want to go to next, Brandon? It was an interesting week when it came to pro wrestling news.
Speaking of streaming, do you want to talk about Peacock? I mean, Netflix, by the way, I was just thinking while you were talking, if we looked at the real numbers, we know how many homes the major cable networks are in, which is at this point like 70 million U.S. homes. There's just about 70 million U.S. Netflix subscribers. Now, that doesn't take into consideration password sharing that may be happening between multiple, you know, between single user accounts. I would venture to guess that Netflix is in more homes than any cable network at this point. And that trend is only going to continue to go in those directions. So you want to talk about how Peacock had what, 23 million viewers. Some of them were watching over the air locally, but yeah, the majority of them, I think, I don't know that we have detailed breakdowns yet from NBC PR or from Nielsen, but
the estimate is that in the local markets of Kansas City and Miami, you're looking at about like maybe like 2 million of those 23 could have been from just your local affiliates around that range. But yes, it's like the previous record for a live U.S. streaming event was 15 million on Amazon. So this greatly exceeded that prior number for Peacock. And it was interesting because this was one of those examples where, I mean, if you were following the discourse online the week of, so many people were up in arms about this being behind a paywall and having to go to Peacock to watch this event. But when push came to shove, the majority did end up watching this game. It did a gigantic number. And in this copycat industry, you are only going to see further examples of this. The difference being, this is the NFL. Not everyone is going to have the same muscle of an NFL wildcard game, but I think this is the most success Peacock has experienced in its 3 years of existence.
Yeah. And just to put that in some perspective. So that was the Saturday night game, the Chiefs and who are the Chiefs?
Dolphins.
Dolphins on Peacock. The only way to watch it was Peacock, except for in your local market, you could have watched it on a local affiliate. But so then the Sunday night game, Sunday is probably a better time slot than a Saturday. I'd want to look at last year's Saturday night wild card game, but the Sunday night game between the Packers and the Cowboys, 40 million viewers as the Cowboys self-destructed against the Packers. I believe the Packers being the first ever 7 seed to win a playoff game in this new 7 seeded playoff format.
I'll take your word for it.
So almost doubling the viewership, probably a better time slot, but to give it some context here. So not a huge audience, but still that's the most streamed event in U.S. history, in terms of a live event. And most importantly, what does this have to do with wrestling? Peacock, as of last we knew, which was in Q3, Comcast reported that they had 28 million subscribers. It's been growing steadily for what that's worth. Still a very unprofitable business, but cable's in decline, so they got to do something. 28 million subscribers. We'll see what they tell us. I mean, by the next quarter report, which should be coming up fairly soon for Q4, I imagine they'll give you some information that is after this game because it's far bigger number than whatever it would have been on December 31st. That's going to mean more reach, more possible watchers, viewers for World Wrestling Entertainment premium live events, including the Royal Rumble, which did have an ad. I imagine you weren't watching in Canada, the Peacock broadcast. I was. There was at least one Royal Rumble ad during this NFL game that I saw with my own eyeballs. So as we've seen, you know, PLE after PLE, Nick Khan will say on those earnings calls, money in the bank, payback, whatever the name of the show is. This was the most watched show of this name, and they'll give a percentage. Never will you get a viewership number. Oh, no. But you will be told this was 20%, 40%, whatever it is, more highly viewed than the one on the record before it. So I imagine Royal Rumble is going to easily break that record because you've got an increasing reach here for, it's sort of just the inverse of how we always talk about how TV ratings are down. Well, there's a headwind here because of the decline of cable. In the opposite direction, when it comes to streaming viewership, there's a tailwind pushing it up because the reach is increasing over time. That this platform is in more and more people's homes, and more people got practice logging in, at least, on Saturday night. So it should help, at least for one PLE. And I would think it's going to help the service for who knows how long. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people who will cancel right away. There's going to be some people who will keep it and continue paying the $6, whatever it is per month. And that's going to continue to help the viewership for those events.
I think it's going to be a sizable bump for the Royal Rumble, that it coincides with a time when this is probably going to be a bigger Rumble than several past years, I would say, like in quite a while. And you just add the fact, like, would you be surprised if Peacock has hit from this past weekend hitting like 40 million? Is that too high of a number, you think, of like what they could be as high as?
This viewership number was not bigger than the number that we knew. It was 20 million viewers, 23 million viewers. We know they already had 28 million subscribers. That's a good question. I think, I don't know, 35, I wouldn't be surprised by something beyond 35, I guess, just to pick a number would be a little bit over my expectations. What do you think? So,
yeah, I'm thinking it's in like that 35 to 40 million window. And I think guaranteed, like, there's a sizable percentage that are, you will get your people that were adamant about just watching this game and immediately getting rid of it. And then you'll also have sort of that middle that are intending to delete this, but they're going to keep it for your 30 days or whatever your subscription is. And of that percentage, you're going to have people that will keep Peacock that you hopefully reel them in. The problem is, like, you have something with the NFL that brings in all these people. Like, what is there for people to stay on board with? It's not like you have another playoff game coming up soon. You're bringing in one specific audience for the NFL. Is their library enticing enough that it's going to keep people beyond that specific reason they signed up for this?
And they're pushing, look, there's college basketball on here. The Olympics in Paris are coming up. According to my notes here, according to this chart that I put together, I don't know how long ago, sometime in the last year or so, the viewership for Royal Rumble last year, 2023, I believe was about, so this is unique accounts watching at least some part live plus same day, 2 million, mm-hmm. which is pretty, I mean, think about what Raw does on cable on USA Network. Raw is doing like 1.5 million, right? So two million accounts, I suppose, if we were to convert that like to like to the way that Nielsen counts average minute viewership, you've got an average of more than one person watching per account. And the year before that looks like 1.3 million. And way back in the 2020 Royal Rumble, this is just before the pandemic, just before touring stopped, 900,000. Not sure if that's just US or what that is. But anyway, that's a benchmark, 2 million. So whatever they say the percentage increase is, we can do the math on Royal Rumble 2024. And so you thought that algebra would be useless, and you'd never have any use for algebra when they were teaching you that in school. But there we go. We'll be able to figure out if they say it's up by 30%, 50%, whatever it might be. It's just probably multiply it by 2 million and you've got it.
Well, let's bring another voice into the conversation. Our algebra expert representing WrestlingObserver.com, a returning champion here on Pollock and Thurston. He is Josh Nason. Hello, Josh.
Hello, Josh.
Guys, we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Thank you.
The time is now to turn the math around. And I'm glad you have me back. Glad to
people
be
everywhere are memorizing the lyrics. Thank you.
That's awesome. I didn't go into the TV ratings, downward spiral, buy rates plummeting. I could do the whole thing. I like the very direct question on that, the whole thing, but glad to be back.
You know, what has become a fun byproduct of that intro is now when there is some kind of business related line in a promo, such as Jeff Hardy citing the demos last week on Rampage, they are now sent to me. So if we ever have to redo the intro, I now have material that's just on standby. And Jeff Hardy mentioning the demo numbers last Friday, that would certainly make the cut.
So kind of like, who it's a band, Fall Out Boy, we didn't start the fire. You know, they redid that or did an updated version. Kind of like having like updated versions every year or so, that'd be a good thing.
Yeah, we will see. The conference calls are always the endless bucket of inspiration for future talks.
We'll see on the TKO side, though, as Brandon and I know, you know as well, that first TKO one was boring, very boring. So hopefully the second one will be a lot better for sure.
Yeah, Nick Khan not being on these calls, that is that would be an unfortunate loss of this TKO merger. But just circling back to our conversation, number one, did you watch the Peacock exclusive game on last Saturday. And do you have any thoughts just in terms of, like, is there a trickle-down effect with the Rumble right around the corner and this being just a gigantic week for Peacock and its relevance to the average sports consumer?
Sure. Yeah, I watched a little bit of it. I was on one of those things that people call a date. I actually got out on a Saturday night. It was nice. My wife and I get out for a bit. But we picked up my daughter from my father-in-law's house or in-law's house, and he was watching the game. He's 82, and he was able to figure out how to get to Peacock without asking me at all. Usually I'm the tech guru in the family and all that. So it was pretty impressive there. You know, I think there can be some trickle down. I didn't see enough of the game to know. Was there a lot of Rumble plugs at all?
Brandon mentioned one.
There was at least one ad. Okay. During an ad break, there was a Royal Rumble ad. It might have had more than one spot, but I definitely saw it once.
Sure, but it wasn't like a huge big push or anything like that. That's kind of interesting to me. So, you know, there can be some sort of trickle down, but it's also the case of, you know, in the past, the clicking through on cable, these elusive casual fans or whoever happen to fall upon wrestling. You know, it's different when you go on a streaming service because you actually have to go into it. You have to see it, engage with it. And then you also have to be hooked in enough in that time frame so you're actually sticking around for that. I think it's trickier with a streaming provider because you have to drill into it rather than just happen to stumble upon it. I mean, there could be some sort of trickle down. I don't, you know, but the fact they didn't make a big like push of it, you know, according to what Brandon was saying, you know, I don't know. I think it's going to do great. And you guys are pointing out some numbers beforehand. There's a reason thing it'll do really well, but I don't think it's going to be that much of a lake effect, put it that way, from the game.
So when you're looking at sort of just the landscape as it is, sort we got the recent predictions for the media landscape this year. We got John Orand and Lightshed providing their insight about Raw. What is Josh Nason's official prediction for this year? Is there anyone that kind of is sort of becoming the clear front runner in your mind that makes sense, or do you think it's still a toss up of sort of these leading contenders that have been mentioned multiple times?
I'm going to jump here ahead to 2025, fellas. And I think that the front runner for the WWE Network domestic streamer rights is going to be Prime. I don't think Raw is going to go to Prime. I think that they are going to be the ones to get the library and to get the monthly streaming events. That's my prediction because it makes a lot of sense to me for a lot of different reasons. And if you use Prime at all, it kind of makes sense. And I think that's going to be the destination there. In terms of Raw rights, the WWE, it's hard to get out of the wrestling bubble and be like, the WWE thing would be a lot of fun from a news perspective, right? Because of all the implications that come out of that. Are they really want to give up the NBA or that little sliver of the NBA after all these years? I don't know, man. Like that's a hard thing to walk away from because then you have to wait another 5 years, assuming that's what the NBA rights deal is. You have to wait all that time to actually get back in there. I don't see them doing it. I could see it being kind of a boring story and the Raw end up going back to NBC Universal, or it could go to an FX. I'm going to go with the incumbent. I'm just going to say that NBC Universal gets Raw back and that the AEW sticks around WBD. They also get some NBA rights and that in a couple of years when these rights are being shopped around for the what I call the network in terms of domestic, that's going to go to Amazon Prime along with the monthly specials. I think that makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons.
How do you think about wrestling going to streaming when, I mean, obviously the BPLEs are already on streaming, but the notion of whether Raw or I guess SmackDown already has a future home in USA Network, but if Raw were to go to Prime or to any other streamer, I guess Prime would be the easiest argument because it's in so many homes, because so many people have it, maybe not necessarily to use the Prime video service, but because of the shipping discount. So it's in probably like 80 million homes or something like that in the United States. We've seen the viewership of Thursday Night Football, which hasn't been like blow away great, but it's down in total viewership from what Fox and the NFL Network were doing combined on Thursday nights in 2021. But the demo is basically equal. The average demo viewership for Thursday Night Football on Amazon Prime Video was slightly higher than what it was last time, 2021, on Fox and the NFL Network. So is that the question I'm trying to get at is there something about the NFL that makes that conversion, makes that maybe that inconvenience of going through and logging in that, you know, people will not endure that for other things like WWE? Or is that just, should I view NFL viewership, comparing NFL viewership to NFL viewership, should I just compare that to itself and look at that as that is an example of how consumer behavior will convert? Like could Raw get the same demo that it gets right now on USA Network, or is the NFL special and we need to put that aside?
Well, so what's important to WWE, right? What do they want? And we've been told forever.
Smiles
on faces. Yeah.
Yes.
Young viewers, right? And what better way to shed old people and people you don't want than to actually go and go to a platform in which it typically favors the young, so to speak, right? They're able to figure these things out and all that stuff. But what is WWE looking for? Looking for exposure. So they with the NBC Universal deal, they have exposure on the network with the streaming specials. They have exposure on USA, which reaches, you know, millions and millions of homes. So they have that. So you got to imagine that most people that watch Raw watch SmackDown now, where there's enough there where people aren't going to be like completely in the dark of where Raw would go if it was to go to a streaming service. And that friction there wouldn't be that tough to find. With the NFL is kind of a perfect thing, especially a playoff game, because people want to see that result. It's not like a regular season game. I know, I remember if it was on this show or WrestleNomics, you talked about the kind of that they were a little bit disappointed with that Saturday night Bills and, whoever it was a couple of weeks
Chargers.
Ago. Bills yeah. and Chargers. But it's a regular season game at this point, right? So playoff game, it's a, you win and you lose and you're out, you win, you move on. There's the betting component as well. People want to see how this turns out, live betting, all that stuff. There's not that element with WWE at all. So it's a, you know, if they were to move to a streaming service, I don't think so many people are kind of concerned about the demos and all this stuff. I think they're going to be just fine. And the other thing, it's not like it's a lifetime deal. How much damage can be really done if one of your entities is on a streaming service for 5 years? Is the company going to go out of business? No, because they're going to get paid for it. They still have this other element with Raw or with SmackDown at that point that'll be on USA and the network streaming, the stream specials and all that stuff. So say, you know, a year in, it's not really working as well as they would hope, whatever those metrics are. You still can lean on this other property and kind of buoy things for 5 years until you're like, it really wasn't for us. And at that point, the whole landscape's going to change anyway. So even if it's not working today, it might work 5 years from now. So I don't know. I think, you know, a lot of people worried about, you know, what happens if they go streaming. They're going to be just fine. You know, this is where we're at right now. It's a question of money, exposure, and they're so well leveraged because they do well financially now. They have tons of money in the bank and they have this other entity, which already scratches those itches of things that they need. So, you know, somebody's going to go full bore into the streaming thing. Why not them to start with one of these packages? But we'll see.
So if you guys are looking at sort of, okay, there's the NFL and your tier one sports that I think you would put, you know, college football, maybe NBA. They're not the NFL, but they're pretty damn close to it. What tier do you place WWE in? And conversely, like, how far down the chain are we looking at for AEW? Because that's, to me, like, I've always been very optimistic of what AEW is eventually going to get with their rights renewal, but it's certainly more of a question mark than it was maybe 12 months ago with mm-hmm. AEW and how things have changed in the industry and where, like, what is, like, there is going to be like a certain breaking point for some of these cable outlets and what they can offer. Is AEW going to be in a secure enough area that they are going to get what is meaningful for them to go forward, to reach profitability and have a successful rights renewal?
Sure. Yeah. That's a great question. It's one of the big questions of 2024 for sure. It's
Josh, you know, is going to answer it for us. He's going to sew it all up.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Today. Yeah. Obviously, you know, a lot of my thoughts on this are shaped by what you guys say, especially Brandon with some of the numbers. He's talked about some of the, you know, projected, what he project potential, you know, revenues are and things like that, kind of what the value could be and everything. It's interesting because a lot of it comes down to advertising too, right? And that's one of the big reasons, you remember, that Fox decided not to go with SmackDown, and that one of the Murdoch sons, Lachlan, might have
Lachlan,
been.
Yeah.
Lachlan, yep. Yes. He essentially said that the advertising revenues just weren't there. So with AEW, it's kind of like, you know, they do pretty consistent ratings, which is good. And they have, you know, hours to fill, which is good. But they don't really, I assume, and we don't know the numbers, I assume their advertising revenue is not better than WWE's in terms of rage or anything like that, anywhere close. So, yeah, it's, I think they're going to be fine because they have the numbers to kind of back it up. It just depends if how WBD sees them in the puzzle. You know, do they see them in a little parts of the NBA, little parts of MLB, little parts of NHL, and it's this and kind of these smaller properties that hit all these different groups? Or, is it a case where like, it's just not worth it? I can't, if they choose to pass on WWE, if it just doesn't work, I can't see them being like, we're good. The question again is how much are they going to get for an increase?
Do you see it all going to WBD? I'm pushing this idea that I could see there's three shows here, Dynamite, Collision, Rampage. Rampage is the least of all, obviously, but maybe these shows get split up, and I don't see WBD not renewing at least one of them. But maybe, I mean, if you think about Fox, and Fox was not into the idea of renewing SmackDown, particularly at an increase when they didn't feel that they were getting the economics out of it through advertising and carriage fees that they wanted. Well, I'll tell you what, per hour, AEW is a lot cheaper, won't deliver a same rating, deliver a lower rating, but it's a lot more cost effective, even taking that into account.
Yeah. Well, what's the benefit of having multiple partners? You have multiple relationships you build, not just with a decision maker, but all the decision makers around that. And then they go to other networks and you start to kind of build these relationships. But yeah, to that point, they shouldn't just have everything in one bucket, because right now that's not the trend in sports. Even the NFL has multiple partners because you never know when you're going to need to kind of go to a relationship and leverage that in some way. Even for a powerhouse like the NFL, they should be looking at these different outlets and saying, okay, leadership could change in WBD in 5 years when this deal is up. Say they resign. And I mean, look how much has changed in the last 5 years going back, right?
Could be Brian Roberts in charge of WBD in 5 years, right? For all we know.
You never know. So
Comcast CEO, yeah.
The point about relationships too is that, you know, you can argue that Tony has been too loyal in this whole thing when you had Ring of Honor and you brought it to WBD and said, hey, I'm in business with you. You have the first offer. I want to put this on television. They say no, thank you. And if the CW is knocking on your door, yes, I'm taking that meeting and I'm beginning that relationship. Now we fast forward, didn't go that direction. And you're probably boxed out now with the NXT deal, that's one less suitor for your programming. And like, I don't know how many offers are going to be on the table for AEW programming that is not Dynamite. CW is going to be one of them, and that, in theory, unless CW still has an appetite for pro wrestling, is one less at the table.
Yeah, that was a very interesting comment that that Tony Khan made. Was he wanted to hold this back as like a card, as like he has an ace in the hole. I don't know. I just don't see Ring of Honor as that ace in the hole. I think your main product is your ace. That's what you're trying to build. I don't see Ring of Honor as the asset that he seems to think that it is, or else WBD would have taken it and put it on one of their 3 billion channels that they own. Why didn't they do that?
CW was interested. Like, I don't know how profitable a deal it would have been, but it would have been something. It was like they wanted to talk with them, not vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Ring of Honor is a rebranded AEW Dark with a great backlog of B-roll in the form of their tape library, which I don't see having a lot of value to a modern streaming service, but it's a nice historical library with a lot of tape from talent who are with you now.
Mm-hmm. But when you have, I mean, look how tough it is for us to keep up with watching AEW when there's a Ring of Honor show and a pay-per-view in the same week, right? I mean, that's hours upon hours. And I think that's even tough for the hardest of hardcore fans to keep up with. So that was kind of the one thing when Ring of Honor came on board. It just, how is this all going to work? There's only so much time that people have to spend in their days and their weeks. And you keep adding more and more and more. I mean, look at this past Saturday night. That didn't have any Ring of Honor on it. And that was still very hard to keep up with. There is going to be a breaking point sometime at some point. I don't know what it's going to be, but you know, it's, trying to make things different and interesting can be tough, especially when you have one guy running both organizations.
You just wait, Josh. We're going to get weekly Battle of the Belts. Okay.
Yeah, three-hour dynamite, maybe.
Yeah. The three-hour dynamite, I mentioned it last time I was here. I definitely think that's a thing for sure.
I think
more.
So I think that just the fact that there isn't an AEW deal yet makes me lean more towards believing the idea that the AEW TV shows could be split up between WBD and another partner. I think, yes, we're all waiting for NBA rights to be done now, but the fact that there is no deal done now and we've got less than a year done on the deal, I don't know if it's December 31st, 2024 or September 30th. In any case, we're under a year now. And if you look at the history of WWE's deals and how those cycles went, the last two cycles where they had a deal done 18 months in advance, and we're under 12 at this point. But to add to like the trying to assess the value of what WWE's TV rights are, if you look at what the NXT got, and NXT is a show that's improved its ratings in the last year pretty dramatically. Nonetheless, it's getting close to what Dynamite is doing. It's not there, but it has really improved its ratings, especially with the demo, younger audience. It got about a $25 million a year deal for those 2 hours a week. And if you break that down by viewer hour, and I will try to show this on the screen. I feel like this is something I'm not going to be able to explain. You're just going to have to trust me here. The cost per viewer hour for all of AEW's content is about 43 cents per hour based on the viewership that they deliver. And if you look at NXT under their new deal, going from 15 million a year to 25 million a year, they're already at 34 cents per view hour, which is under what AEW is currently. So you could look at that. And if that were the only thing you were looking at, you'd be like, how can I justify? I mean, look what other similar properties are getting here. If I was David Zaslav trying to make a conservative buy case, why should I pay much more than what I'm already paying you? Because look at what NXT got. That's defined what the going rate is for wrestling content. That's doing pretty comparable viewership to what you're doing. And especially if you're roping in the Collision and the Rampage, which deliver lower ratings than Dynamite, why should I pay you more than the 43 cents per viewer hour that I'm already paying you? And I guess the argument that AEW will have to make is that, no, you should really pay us closer to what SmackDown is getting and closer to whatever Raw, which is already at a dollar per viewer hour, is getting.
Yeah, that's when you mentioned this a few weeks ago, or maybe this is last month. Time just is a flat circle when it comes to wrestling news. That is I think a hugely underreported, underappreciated part of this whole thing, is that NXT deal getting done and financials attached to it. And you have the numbers right here.
NXT got a new TV deal. Here's why that's bad news for AEW.
Yeah. And not like the company's going to go bad, but in terms of like, you know, people think, oh, it's going to go up 2x or something like that. I mean, to your point, that's a thing that they can point to and be like, look at this. Right. And that's a huge, that could be. It's such a fascinating thing to see where this turns out. I'm also interested in this. When does their exclusive negotiating window end? Because if we're talking that this runs to the end of the year, Tony Khan's going to have time to talk to other partners, right? And if there's a case, I mean, look, the SmackDown deal was done, what, a year prior to when it's going to flip over to, yes, USA. So you have.
And I believe Nick disclosed that. One was done, I think the SmackDown window closed first and then the Raw did, but he was clear about that sometime in the spring or summer.
Yeah, he was talking like after Mania, I think the exclusive window opened and then it was like, yeah, remember the calls after. Yeah, I was kind of talking about that. The point being that you need time. You need time to talk to all these different entities. I assume, and I think, Brandon, you and I talked about this on my show a while ago, who Tony Khan's going to have helping him with this process, if it's the same person they had helping him before.
AAM, which is Active Artist Management, which is an agency that he is an investor in. Right. He helped found, I believe.
So, I mean, if he's going to say, you know, I'm going to do this all myself, that's one more thing added onto the pile. I can't imagine with something this important, he's going to do this solely himself, but you have to have those. You know, he's been talking kind of a big game with that. I think there's a lot of interested parties and all that. Do you guys think that it's going to go to free agency, so to speak? Or do you think this is going to be a done deal before the window even opens up?
I wouldn't be surprised think about when do we think this deal ends either? I think Dave is saying, maybe you remember better, Josh, maybe Dave's saying the end of Q3. I had heard it's at one point, the end of Q4. I don't know. It's somewhere around that time. If it's, you know, we're now under a year, I wouldn't be surprised if the window opened at the beginning of this year. I mean, I was under the impression that they were still in the exclusive negotiating window not that long ago in December. So it could be that they are now out of it, but who knows? That's a question for a press conference soon.
Yes, one that will get a long, drawn-out answer. We won't actually get any sort of something to come up about the Continental Classic, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet-setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Save big on brunch for mom. All in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
A story I thought was really interesting this week was what Ariel Helwani reported on the MMA Hour, and that is that the UFC's debut card, which is going to be a fight night on March 2nd in Saudi Arabia, has been postponed. Now, it's not out of the realm of, you know, it does happen every now and then where a UFC event has to be pushed, but this was one that had a $20 million price tag attached to it. And when Ariel explained that pretty much the reason is this card was just not looking to be up to snuff of what they were expecting. And they had not announced a main event yet. The fights that were on there were fights, just ordinary fights. And it does show that, yes, this is not just this unlimited ATM of a country that is going to spend money for entertainment and sports. There are some like objectives that they want out of these cards, whether it be publicity, whether it buzz, none of which this card was at least having at the time that we're talking about this. So it just becomes interesting that here is, you know, so the first time we've seen like some pushback here to like, all right, build us a better card and then come back to cash this $20 million check.
They're the embodiment of fans that complained when the UFC calendar started going like increasing. Are like, what is this card? What is this card? What is this main event? We were powerless to do anything against it. Who knew the Saudi Arabian government was going to be the embodiment of the feelings that we had? But yeah, I mean, I almost said good on them, you know, but, you know, Saudi Arabian government, but like good on them for, I mean, they're right. They're paying this money. And I wonder to an extent, you know, we look at how well the WWE PLEs in Saudi Arabia improved and kind of really became part of canon, you know, like they became more important over the past few years. Cause look, I mean, they're spending a ton of money on those and they want those to have importance and feel relevant to the storylines and kind of how the, how things work. But yeah, you're right. It's not an endless ATM. There's expectations for that money. So I'm glad they pushed back on that because, they're saying what a lot of other people don't. And they look, Dana White actually in the company got put in their place. They had to move a show. That never happens ever, ever, ever. Unless it's a case of the, Tachi Palace back in the COVID days or, you know, when they had to move shows, the John Jones fight way back in the day. Right. I mean, they don't ever get put in their place and Dana White loves beating his chest and saying that you're never going to tell me what to do. They got told what to do. That never happens. So you do that for a partner and you do that because there's a ton of money on the line and you want to make your partners happy. And I think this also indicates how important the Saudi Arabian government is to their current day and also to their future. Interesting because of all the comments that Ari Emanuel made years ago, you know, giving money back to them and all that stuff and how that relationship has changed and all that. Kind of interesting how that works.
So this was going to be $20 million, which... And I know for a UFC live event gate, UFC's gates are way bigger because ticket prices are way bigger than I'm comparing to WWE here. But $20 million is a lot of money. It was going to happen March 2nd, and now it's going to happen in June. So there were already fights scheduled for this card. There's already a card in place.
Yes. Yeah.
I guess it's just it, and this was
which
an underwhelming card.
I guarantee you, all those fighters that are preparing for this found out about it through Ariel Helwani's announcement. I guarantee you, they were not given a heads up by the company in advance.
Yeah.
And I guess this was a pretty underwhelming card. I guess, right?
Yeah. I mean, again, it was like they had not even announced a main event for it. Like it was literally just fights that were thrown together of like. Like that was it. It was the novelty of UFC being in the country was what they had. And you can see as Josh, you can see how they are stacking up. 299 is an enormous card, goes without saying with 300. But like from a financial standpoint, I was like, this card should have been a giant priority. And I think you kind of had that belief of, no, we're going to export the letters UFC and that's going to fulfill this contract. And I don't think they believed that there would be pushback. In terms of show number one being expected to be this blockbuster event. And they're beginning this relationship by stating, no, like we want top level fights. And this does not cut it for the check that we are providing.
They are in an interesting position, very similar how AEW was in one sense of last year when you had All Out in August, All In in August, All Out the next week in Chicago, and then they had the stadium show in Queens, Grand Slam, a couple weeks later, when you have a lot of expectations in a short period of time, and you have to put some stuff together to work. You talk about 299. A lot of people seem to think that 299 is a better card than 300. There's a huge expectation for UFC 300. I think when the Conor McGregor-Michael Chandler fight did not get scheduled for that show, there was kind of, I had this kind of feeling of like, huh, all right, interesting, because you think 300, you think big. And I know Ariel's talked to us before that people are kind of getting their expectations a little bit too high, that the show is going to be good, but it's not going to be it's not going to have that same feeling like UFC 100 or UFC 200, where just it felt like, you know, the sports world kind of turned their eyes to that event and it made it kind of like, this is what the UFC is all about. It's, there are going to be good fights on that show, but there's not going to be like the Conor McGregor kind of the over the top thing. Which also to me is an indication of something I've been talking about for a while. And I think people feel it is that the UFC doesn't really have like breakout stars like they did a couple of years ago when it was the McGregors, the Lesnars, the Rouseys, those types, which really just, and maybe we're just lucky to be in that time when you had all these fighters that just caught fire like they did and crossed over. They have McGregor, but McGregor hasn't fought in years, right? I mean, they have great fighters, I think from top to bottom. The sport is in a much better spot in terms of talent from top to bottom, but in terms of crossover stars, they have great fighters, but I don't feel that there's not that crossover. I think Israel Adesanya is the closest thing, but he hasn't like fully kind of made it, you know, in terms of recognizability with the general sports fan, like an Anderson Silva, GSP, a Lesnar, the McGregors, those types have. And so, yeah, when you have these Saudi shows, you don't really have a big star you can put on there to kind of buoy it. I can see why they push back, and I can see why people get frustrated, potentially get frustrated with UFC 300. But what Dana White's going to say is never judge a fight card before it actually happens. And he's going to point to all these examples in the past, but as a promoter, and that's what he does.
I guess must have been Kareem Zidane who was with us in probably November ahead of the last WWE show in Saudi Arabia, who really just buried the notion that the Saudi government would accept a UFC fight night card that was not of a higher quality. And he turned out to be right, I guess. Mm-hmm. I guess it just, you know, we've sort of been taught over the last, 6 years that WWE has been holding events in Saudi Arabia, that these are not just standard pay-per-views. It's Shawn Michaels coming out of retirement. It's The Undertaker appearing when he rarely appears.
Where's Yokozuna?
just going to go to Yokozuna. You know, there's just some extraordinary things that are happening on these cards. And, you know, a standard UFC fight night card, I guess, is not going to cut it.
Yeah. And I think that now that we are all these years into, you know, it was this month in 2018, they announced the 10-year deal. And here we are this many years later. And I mean, in 2018, like you had, I think, some concern about, you know, being in business with this government. And then we went through the Jamal Khashoggi murder. And I mean, they went through some really, really rough backlash. But here we are. And I think in a way, just the proliferation of boxing fights over there now the UFC is working with the government, and the WWE has all, like, they have just stuck the course. They have made $50 million for every one of these shows. They have normalized these shows. And now they're at a place where the Saudi show comes around. It's just, it's another pay-per-view in the 4-week cycle between pay-per-views. To me, that is what they were paying for, was over time. This is where we are at in terms of image enhancement and getting the buy-in from, you know, whether it is your, you know, boxing promoters or in this case, WWE.
Yeah. I wonder if Vince had to smooth that over since he was the one that made the relationship to begin with. Right. I wonder, you know, I just, you have those guys that are so close to them like that. I wonder if Vince was the one that kind of had to make it, I'll say make it right, but it was kind of a peacemaker, for lack of a better phrase, so the Saudis don't have a bad taste in their mouth. And it's not a great way to start a relationship when you feel like, okay, this isn't what we expected. And there's the immediately start with that kind of, you know, suspect feeling, put it that way. But yeah, there were the two BFFs right there.
Is Vince going to go over for Anthony Joshua and Francis Ngannou in March?
Well, is he? I mean, if Taker wants to go, brother, he's going to be there. Those two guys will head over, new BFFs. Yeah.
We'll get another Vince McMahon media scrum. This will be our insight into Vince McMahon. We'll be that in the Netflix series. But yeah, very interesting, the rationale behind it, and you know, some pushback here from Saudi Arabia on the UFC front. But let us also touch upon, I want to just chat a little bit about this past weekend, because as you mentioned, Josh, there were like dozens of shows going on, and thrown into the mix was the reemergence of TNA. Under those letters, they had two, I would say, pretty successful nights in Las Vegas. They did about, 1,200 to 1,500, give or take. I don't know if Brandon has the actual numbers there, but seems to be for TNA standards, like some of their best business that they have done in years. I would say there was generally a good amount of curiosity of just TNA resurfacing, but where. Like, this is not 2012 anymore for TNA, where they are almost like your default option B if you're not interested in WWE. Right. It's a way more crowded.
1,600 for Hard to Kill, about 1,300 for Snake Eyes.
Yeah. So, I mean, your second night you had Kazuchika Okada.
That's WrestleTix numbers, by the way.
I guess just in a roundabout way, what is TNA's placement in this industry? And is there like upward ability for TNA, or are they sort of at a place that this is the area of the food chain that they will occupy?
I don't see that much of a difference. I think that, I don't want to say this is a last resort, not say this is cryptic, but this is kind of a last resort for them to kind of have their footing in the business. And again, not like they're going to go out of business, but you know, they changed the name of their company again. And going back to this thing, which, you know, depending on what you believe about the reasons for the change about partners overseas and things like that, I don't really believe that. I just think that we need to change things up. How do we change things up? You can change a set, you can change a ring, you change colors and all this stuff. But can we change kind of the name and go back to it? Is that worth it? And that name has a lot of history with it, both good and a lot of bad. Again, the Dixie Carter, Vince Russo, Eric Bischoff, Hogan years and things like that. And there's so much negative associated with it. You know, you're going head on into it and saying, let's bring back this name and create a new legacy for it. You know, they made bids for Punk and Ospreay, depending on how much the actual bids were. So they're at least trying to get out there in the news cycle. The reason that I don't think there's going to be that much change, and you see this picture, you know, this talent roster right here. For the most part, they've had a lot of this talent for the past year plus, couple of years. Their women's division has been excellent the past couple of years. They brought in, they've done this thing where they're bringing people on short-term deals, 4-month, 6-month deals, and cycling them in and out, kind of like an old territory system. You know what I mean? Like, they don't do this with everyone, but some people they do. They have their mainstays. They have their, The matches have always, for the most part, been great. There's some comedy, which is kind of like, kind of rolls your eyes out a little bit. But, you know, what promotion doesn't have that these days?
Occasional murder.
Yes, the occasional murder. Yeah, we'll see if those increase. I think they're 0-2 in guys and people being killed and coming back to life. I think they're, you know, they can't seem to keep people. They're hard to kill, I guess you could say.
Oh.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, I don't, you know, it's, they have Nick Nemeth. So they're trying some things. But I just don't see changing the name all of a sudden having all these people swoop to it. I'm sure there'll be a little bit of a hockey stick effect kind of up to the right for a little bit. You know, we'll see if they start kind of publicizing, you know, buy rates, and things like that for Hard to Kill. I mean, it's a rebranding, but it's a last ditch effort to see if they can maybe make a run at number two, even though that's a pretty big gap. But I think they're a firm number three. You know, Scott D'Amore is really good at what he does. And I think the hand he's been given, I just don't see this being a huge change. I just don't see any indication why being different than last year in terms of in-ring. And again, what are they going to do that's different than all these other options that are out there? That's such a challenge for all these groups. What are you going to do differently? Not like NWA different, which is a completely bad kind of different. What are you going to do that's different? Why are people's Saturday nights and Thursday nights and so on need to be committed to watching your product if they've already watched Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Dynamite, Collisions coming up?
When you say number three, you mean the US, I assume.
Like, yeah.
Why not even say New Japan is number three when I can look at for one data point? Battle in the Valley in San Jose did 2,100, which is almost, I mean, well, they did 1,600 and 1,300 in Las Vegas on two consecutive days. San Jose, Battle in the Valley, New Japan did about 2,100.
Mm-hmm. Well,
they're both on the same network. Now Impact is getting higher viewership. But at least in terms of a live event, New Japan, and what did they do prior to that? Long Beach, they did almost 3,000. In Washington, D.C., they did 2,158.
Yeah. I mean, Brandon, does New Japan have Johnny Bravo? I mean, do they have Dirty Dango? I mean, come on, what are we talking about right here? I mean, no, I that's good points. I think
it's the opposite kind of what people kind of classify as like the glory days of TNA. And yes, they had their ups. They certainly did. But I think at a time when they had their largest exposure, it was a lot of stuff that did not ultimately push the brand forward. It turned off a lot of people. And now I think the quality of the show has been as consistent as ever. Mm-hmm. I think the booking is generally very good, but I just don't know how much of a mass audience is just tuning in for great booking and, you know, good wrestling that I'm getting across the board from everyone at this point. Right. And I'm sure, and you can hear this in a lot of the interviews that these performers and personnel do, that it's sort of like hitting their head against the wall that, man, we've got a great product. We just need more eyes to watch it. And that's why TNA, it feels like this was just a publicity campaign to get eyes on the product. And it's just one that it's just the reality of the situation that, you know, it's not a knock against the product. It's just the reality of like how many fans are out there for non-WWE, non-AEW branded professional wrestling. And TNA is like, it's not the days of being able to get a million viewers every week on Spike.
Yeah. And that's a great aspect too, is around access. And a lot of care providers don't have access, or it's on a tier we have to pay up for. That's a little bit of an issue there. And to Brandon's point too, like I think it's mostly anecdotal that I don't consider New Japan number three, and not based on any numbers, which probably in the wrong audience to be actually saying that. But it's just because they don't have like a weekly, like a traditional weekly TV product that you can kind of follow week to week, like you do in some of the, you know, traditional, you know, domestic companies and things like that. But yeah, it's, again, I don't see any difference. This is an interesting year for them. You know, they took a lot of time off. I think almost too much time off between the close of Impact and kind of leading up. It's weird. Like TVs are kind of designed to lead up to a big show, and their TVs were like best ofs and like the best of TNA from the past. And it really wasn't like a huge like up ramp to kind of leading into Hard to Kill. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I mean, the talent's been there. The action's been there. But until they kind of get on a bigger service, or more people can see them, or they really give a reason for people to see them. You know, they signed a Punk or an Ospreay. Punk, obviously more, who would have had a mortgage the whole company probably, but that would have been kind of interesting and kind of that realistically the chance that they would have to make a real, real, real big impact. Otherwise, it's a really solid wrestling company, but there's a lot of solid wrestling companies out there, and you got to break through.
And before I mislead anyone, so let me know if I'm right here. They haven't produced any new TV or aired any new TV since the middle of November. Is that right? So these numbers that I have on the screen here, averaging 78,000 in November, that includes a lot of best of shows and reruns. Yep. Or I don't know if they did reruns, but best of shows, right?
Yes.
But if you look back, they were doing throughout last year in the spring and summer, over 100,000 viewers per episode, which is substantially bigger than what New Japan is doing in the following hour.
Yeah. It's interesting depending on, you know, the, like you look at that October number. So they announced after Bound for Glory, which I believe was the first week in October. That's when they announced the change to TNA. And that number is not as high as the other numbers. It's kind of interesting, right? You would think like if you had some momentum going, you know, they would have, that would kind of have some sort of carryover effect. And, you know, to Brandon's point, they did a lot of best ofs and kind of lead ins for, you know, the up through Hard to Kill. But even the rest of
new content is starting tomorrow night, I think.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. They're back at it. Yeah. And tomorrow, I mean, tomorrow's interesting because it'll be, Ospreay versus Josh Alexander. They have the first Nick Nemeth promo. You know, for those people that haven't read the spoilers or even have read the spoilers and want to kind of watch the show. I think tomorrow will be kind of interesting to see what happens with that. But yeah, I don't expect any type of huge difference or anything.
Well, we will. How many years do they get out of the TNA branding? When do they move back to Impact?
I think
they get a good 2 years out of this.
I'm old enough to remember when NWA and TNA were the same thing.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. That's right. Those weekly pay-per-views, $10. Yeah, from the Nashville Fairgrounds. Yeah, I think this is it until they fold up shop, which I don't think it'll ever be. They're hard to kill. They say it themselves. But yeah, I think they're TNA till they die, and I think that's the way it's going to be.
Let's wrap up, Brandon. Do you have any of the latest viewership figures? This being a holiday week, we were backlogged with several numbers. I guess did any stand out to you? I guess Battle of the Belts, we did have its lowest 18 to 49 audience ever, despite what I would say was maybe the most, you know, one of the most significant matches that they promoted on one of these Battle of the Belts with the street fight with Chris Jericho. But this was a very busy night, wrestling wise and NFL wise too.
Yes, it was going against NFL playoff game. It was the Peacock game, I guess, that it was going against, yeah. Right? Saturday night. So anyway, yeah, which did what we know, 23 million viewers we talked about earlier. 400,000 viewers for Collision, 0.10 in the demo, which was followed by Battle of the Belts doing 351,000 viewers, 0.09 in the demo. And that was, you said this was the lowest demo ever for Collision?
For Battle of the Belts.
For Battle of the Belts. That's right. That's right, it was, because I have them all listed here, don't I? Yes, and at 0.09, it has never been lower than that. The total viewership number was lower for the October 2022 Battle of the Belts, which is the fourth one, for whatever that's worth.
Man, these Battle of the Belts, they really, look at how this thing started. Like, there was so clearly, like...
It's no Ric Flair versus Barry Windham in 1986,
well, they tuned in, and that January 2022 show, they thought, man, we're going to see Flair Windham all over again. And look at that, 0.27 that they did for that first Battle of the Belts. And if I'm not mistaken, that was against an NFL game that night, too, because we are in January at that point. But, like, it does tell you, like, there was certainly an appetite for these quarterly specials that... people quickly, like, look just how quickly those suddenly were doing a 0.12, a 0.10 for these specials.
And so a big reason for that is there's no title changes ever. There's been, I think, let me do this last time. I think there's two title changes.
Two out of like 24 or something, whatever the number of matches.
And they're both for the, I think they're both for the TNT title, and they both involved Sammy Guevara. And they were like, a long time ago. Ever since then, the champions always win every single time. So what is the, like, what is, from a viewer standpoint, again, this goes back to what we're talking about in terms of, like, how are you different? What is, it's just content. There'll be virtually the percentage show. The data doesn't lie. We can't ignore the math, can't ignore the data. There's never going to be a title change. They're just matches. And you saw title matches on pay-per-views. You saw title matches on Dynamite. You're going to see one tonight with Samoa Joe and Hook. There's no, like, they just exist. So I'm like, this is stuff that kind of drives me crazy with this. Like, be more inventive. Like, at this point, you see the numbers, like, it exists. Do, like, make it, switch it up and do, like, a contender series or some other better word. What's, like, the matches are determined.
Tony Khan's contender series. We do, we go to the UFC Apex, and Tony Khan comes in and he just watches, front of no fans, and we just watched
zero fans.
Yeah,
zero fans. No question. Sorry, Brandon. No question about gates or anything like that. We're going to no data, no fans at all. But yeah, to have like a number one contender matches that set up or future Dynamite or pay per view or something like that, add some stakes to it because the title's not changing. You can say like the championship is the stake. But if historically we've shown there's no way that a title is going to change hand, what is the point? You've told your viewers forever for year. I mean, what, almost going on 2 years now that you're never going to see a title change. This is just, they're just matches. These are things I see and I'm like, just make it different. Make it matter. Make something. We're spending this time watching. Make it different. That's all we're asking. And
clearly from this one forward, from the October 2022 one forward, it's just been added on as an extra hour of at first Rampage, and now it's an extra hour of Dynamite. But I would suggest it's symptomatic of some other things that I think we get an impression of when we hear Tony on media calls and press conferences, that he's very able to tell you why he cares about it. He's absolutely sold these events to himself, but not in a way that necessarily persuades enough people that it makes a difference in something like viewership.
Right. And this could be an asset that they sell off to somebody else. They could brand this like, you know, the NBA is, I've heard somewhere that, you know, could they sell off the in-season tournament to a partner, right? Could TNT just take that if they want to? Mm-hmm. You know, could AEW actually spin off?
I don't see this as very valuable content, though. This is just an extra hour of Rampage or Collision.
But could you, if someone's like, I kind of want Rampage, but not really, or, you know, to a CW type, could you package up a Battle of the Belts and a Rampage and give them, you know, specials or something? Just, yeah, how do you get more kind of people in the mix? Is it an asset that people have versus just an hour on the existing partner? I don't know.
Again, it would be a great question, and I don't know if we'll get it answered if CW has an exclusive or if WWE has an exclusive with CW, because I do see CW as like, dude, if they were interested in Ring of Honor, they're interested in just about anything. Like mm-hmm. that is like, I would put that at the lowest point of what AEW has to offer programming wise. And if that's off the table, that's a major coup by WWE. If they got CW off the table, they're getting, you know, a relative increase for it. And it takes off someone that we knew was at least interested in Ring of Honor. I don't know how many places would be interested in a Battle of the Belts or a Rampage, save for a CW. So that is that, that's a real interesting one. And I would think like they probably, like we do know NWA is on the CW app. At this point. So, I mean, there's at least the ability for other pro wrestling to exist. Are they looking for more wrestling? I would think like they probably have their fill at this point.
Isn't it crazy that there's been like no announcement about the NWA and CW? I mean, there's a thing out there. They're putting more episodes starting in February, but like there's almost like they can't even mention it. They just like mention it in passing. Like, oh, there's going to be some new episodes on there. But what is the relationship? What is it? Like, there was all this talk about, Billy Corgan and I'm so conflicted because Smashing Pumpkins are one of my favorite bands of all time. And it's like all this stuff in the wrestling side. It just drives me crazy. But like, what is the deal? Wouldn't you think that there'd be some sort of like, hey, you can get
these conclusions that shook the
shows here, right? I mean, it's so strange that there's no attempt to create buzz around this as a positive. It's something that exists and they mention a social media post and that's it. Like, is there a deal? Is there anything else? I mean, to me, it almost like proves the claims right that when all this stuff was going on, that Samhain stunt really cost them something. And I don't know if they were talking NXT anyway or not, but it's oddly quiet when companies cannot wait to tell you who they're streaming with or who they can be on. And this one, they are on a streaming service that I guess has some popularity. I don't know. But the NWA is like not talking about it. And CW's not talking about it. It's like, is there a deal? Is there not? Like, it's just one of those kind of these giant questions that's out there from last year that still isn't answered yet. And it should be because there's programming on there. So what's the deal? Is there a deal? I don't know. It's odd. Really odd to me.
It's the mystery of the NWA, which I think typically brings more questions than we have answers for in terms of its deal with CW, and also like really what is going to be the appeal of old wrestling episodes going up on your streaming app. Like I don't sense that that high of a demand unless you are someone that is just getting your NWA fix on a weekly basis and have to go back and rewatch New Era, Old Problems, episode 2 of the recent season. So anyway, anything else before we shut things down, Brandon? Anything we did not check off the box? We only get limited time with Josh Nason. We got to make it worth our time.
There's WrestleMania 3 discussion we could have, but we could have that on any given week of Pollock and Thurston.
I think we have to just table that one for a future Bix and Span appearance. Yes.
Yes.
You might not be aware, Josh. There's this dispute going on about how many people attended WrestleMania 3.
Oh, I've heard. I've heard about, of course, the charts that Brandon has worked on. I've heard of Bix has some opinions and things like that. We're going back to 1987 to try to uncover.
Here's my bold prediction. Someone is going to write a book on the WrestleMania 3 attendance figure. It's going to be 93,173 will be the title with an asterisk next to it. That's going to be, I will predict that, I will predict someone in like the wrestling ecosystem is going to write this book. It's going to happen. I think, I think it's an easy ECW press.
Yes.
Let's get it to market immediately. Exactly. But Josh, it's always great to catch up with you. Do tell us what is going on in Wrestling Observer Land and everything else that is going on from Josh Nason's punch out and everything in between. And who's going to win the Super Bowl and why is it the Buffalo Bills in 2024?
Yes, the Buffalo Bills. I do enjoy your both your discussions about the NFL playoffs and the Buffalo Bills and so on, even though you both barely watch football, as you both kind of mentioned. So
we were glued to Peacock. I crossed the border to go watch the Peacock game.
Wow. Canada. Look at you. That's commitment. Yeah. So obviously, wrestlingobserver.com, a website, listeners have probably heard of before. I'm a contributing editor there. Of course, our great website writers and editors, the team, Joe Currier, Ethan, Ian, and Brian Rose, tremendous team, all of our recappers, all this stuff. I can't put over those guys enough. Of course, Dave Meltzer, Brian Alvarez in the podcast world and all of our other podcasters. I host a podcast there a couple times a month. Of course, the past couple months have been very busy because I've been doing my pro wrestling year in review series and been going month by month and going into basically everything that happened for, again, every single month has its own unique episode with a unique guest. I also do an MMA year in review series, a four-parter there. So if people want to kind of go back and look at those and listen to those, they're really, I put a lot of work into them and I really enjoy how they turn out. As you can see there on the screen, if you're watching YouTube, I talked to Fritz von Erich, aka Holt McCallany from the Iron Claw. We had a good discussion.
If you scored Fritz von Erich, we would be.
That's true.
You get more subscribers than Peacock.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to save that. I have to save that one for the Laps fan. I mean, those guys have earned an interview with Fritz, Zombie Fritz. But yeah, Holt and I did a third. I call him Holt because he's my best friend. You know, we did a 30-minute interview. Great guy, just an awesome guy. I talked about all kinds of stuff with him. That interview is also available on YouTube as well. And you can check us out and subscribe. And all my podcasts are free, not behind the paywall. So you can listen to them anytime. Working on getting some maybe some older episodes on Spotify, make it a little bit easier for people to listen to. But that's kind of all the plugs. I'm also going to be on Jason Powell's show, ProWrestling.net. Actually might be out today or tomorrow. We also talk some doing a big media tour, guys. This is great. But it's all the plugs for now, I guess.
Yes. We thank your PR team for green lighting the interview here with Josh Nason coming here onto Pollock and Thurston. I'm sure we will check in with you in the near future as always, but always great to catch up with you, Josh, and pick your brain about where is this pro wrestling industry going?
Same here. And hopefully next time with better lighting. My lighting in here is awful. So I need to fix it for next time and not have it be like a hostage situation. So I promise by the next time we talk, I'll have some better lighting and hopefully stuff that does not make me blind, but we'll see. Yeah. You gotta do what you gotta do these days.
All right.
You look fine.
I will be back tonight with Wei Ting. We've got Rewind to Dynamite coming your way. And then we are going to be back on Thursday at postwrestlingcafe.com with a special edition of Talk, where, get this, Wei and I, we're going to talk. That is the whole concept. So check that out on Thursday. And then this Sunday, patreon.com/WrestleNomics to catch Brandon. Is this a solo effort on Sunday? Will we have extra voices? What are we expecting on Sunday?
Planning to be a solo effort. Yes. And there are TV ratings review reports, the Collision report, the quarter hours for Collision and Battle of the Belts are there. I hope to have Raw ratings soon as well.
All right. We will see how Raw fared against the NFL game, the Iowa caucus, and the Emmy Awards. That even that, I mean, slipping into the pro wrestling audience with the the acceptance speech. I didn't have Kota Ibushi being name dropped in an Emmy acceptance speech.
And Matt Cardona.
On my bingo card this year. But here we are in 4.3 million viewers for the Emmy Awards. Just by the way, I mean, like, Jesus, that's a dreadful number for the Emmys. I mean, they should be concerned. Here we are focusing on all these wrestling numbers. I mean, the Emmy Awards. Did you watch, Josh? Did your 82-year-old father-in-law watch the Emmy Awards?
No, he was probably sleeping at that point. I think they did better than the Golden Globes, though, right? Golden Globes did a couple billion. Is that right?
I think Golden Globes beat the Emmys, I think.
Really? Oh, wow. Okay.
Don't quote me on this, anyone out there. I chat about wrestling, not general entertainment.
Aggregators, get to it. On E! Entertainment News, it'll be John Pollock says Golden Globes destroyed the Emmys. All caps.
Golden Globes did 9.4 million viewers, and I think I heard the Emmy Awards did something like 4 million. I'm
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was like 4.3, if I'm not
4.3 million, yep.
Okay, don't ever question
Doubled.
John Pollock here, okay? So E, that's your headline. John Pollock nails it, as per usual. But for Josh Nason, Brandon Thurston, I am John Pollock. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. We're back same time next week, Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern. Goodbye.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.